Sandra Carroll interviewing Ole Olson on July 25th. He went jumped in 1950 at Cave Junction. Was that the only time that you worked for any part of the Forest Service?
That was my first assignment, as I remember, with the Forest Service. Yes, I'd worked for Bureau of Entomology at Yosemite National Park prior to that, 1946. Various other jobs around the country, but those were my first federal jobs, yeah.
How did you get involved in smoke jumping?
I know it was through a friend at college who had... Bill Kickbush was one, and at Michigan State. Bill Kickbush was one friend, and I'm not sure whether it was he that influenced me or not, but another one I think was Dwight Patton. And I hope I've got that person correct, but that's been a long time. But he was a classmate of mine and had jumped either in 48 or 49. As I recall, and we were talking about it, and I was interested, and I needed a job for the summer, and it looked like a good way to spend the summer.
What were you taking in college?
I was taking forestry.
Oh, you were about to forestry.
Yeah, yeah.
What was it about smoke jumping that appealed to you?
Oh, God. I think the adventure and the idea of it. I've always been a little afraid of heights ever since, and probably before, you know. But, no, I think it was the adventure. You know, all the young bucks are adventurous enough to try something at least once. And I really enjoyed it. I really did.
Were the rest of the people involved in your outfit college students, or what was the makeup of the
Yes, student? Most of them were college students. I remember Willie Unsold, who was one of the first men on Everest, was in my group, and I knew Willie quite well when we were jumping together, and I'd met him a couple of times since. There were a couple of local loggers from the Cave Junction area at the time, two brothers, as I recall, but I don't remember their names. Most of the fellows were Army veterans, were service veterans from World War II. Of course, being 1950, that would put those fellows in that age bracket where, you know, in the 20 to 25-year-old bracket, you know. But I would say most of them.
Were they forestry majors?
No, not very many of them were really forestry. I remember there was one studying law. There were other, you know, disciplines involved, but I would say of the college graduates, remembering back, there were probably very few, not over three or four of my outfit that were forestry or related.
What's your opinion of why they were jumping?
Oh, I think they probably were the same reason I was. You know, they were. There's a certain amount of macho ego thing, you know. And those at that age too, you want to do something that nobody else has done, or very few other people. And hey, in those days, you know, there were very few people that had jumped swamp. Well, now you know, after a reunion the other day, where you look around and the woods is full of them, you know. But in those days, very few people. And so I was one of the very few for a long time. And although I only jumped one year, I was graduated the next year and took a permanent job with a company. That's one of the years that, or one of the summer jobs that I'll have that will stay with me the rest of my life. And as evidenced by the fact that we did go to the smoke jumper reunion last week. But I think the fellows that were there, some of them had jump experience in the Army, but at that time it was not it wasn't even desirable to have jump experience in the Army. However, they liked it, or they wouldn't have been there. The big thing, as it is today, is their firefighting capabilities, knowledge and capabilities. And I'd done some of that before.
You did do some firefighting before.
Yeah, yeah. With Yosemite National Park and several other places, you know, and mostly on a local basis.
So you did have some experience firefighting before you went to school.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Do you remember your training for smoke jumpers?
Yeah, quite well.
Could you tell me that?
I remember it was do a couple of laps around the airfield, you know, in the morning before breakfast, and as I recall, and you come in and have breakfast, and then some loosening up exercises, some calisthenics, as I remember starting, and our field was about 3 or 4 miles from Cave Junction, the town itself. And yet our training site was downtown in Cave Junction at the ranger station. It was not out to the base at all. It was down there in town. I remember a grove of Douglas fir that was in, you know, and man, they were a long ways to the top. Or up to the first limb, you know. We had some rig-ups in amongst the trees there where we would climb and our letdowns were from stretched between two trees, you know, learning letdowns and stuff like that. And our torture rack had to be out in the sun, you know, there wasn't any other place for it. And that was the one we bent over backwards for, you know.
So you felt it was pretty rigorous training?
Oh, I sure did. Yeah, you bet. And we all, as I recall, you hear a lot of griping and everything about it, but it was not malicious. It was, good natured. Grasp about the torture rack and kind of kid everybody along with it, you know, and the letdowns. And I think the toughest job that I had, we had to climb those Doug fir, and they were around 5 feet in diameter at your, you know, breast height at the ground. Maybe, 5 feet, let's say. But you had to climb up a long ways, I remember. I can't remember how far it was, but it seemed to me as though it was up around the first limbs, because we had a little bell up there we had to ring, and it took me several attempts to get far enough off the ground so my knees quit shaking. it was very rigorous as far as I was concerned, especially when you were somewhat excited with it, you know. I remember that was my toughest job, though. We had to learn to climb, of course, in order to get our chutes out and everything, and with our spurs and stuff. And that old Doug fir bark, you know, you had to have those long bark spikes on your boots, on the climbing irons. And they were made especially for climbing the thick bark Doug fir and sugar pine that are in that country.
And how long did this training take?
Oh, boy, I don't know. It just seemed like forever, but I suppose before we jumped the first time, it was at least 2 weeks, maybe three, before we started making our practice jumps.
And do you remember your first practice jump?
No, but I remember about my third one. Well, the first two or three, you know, you kind of you're thinking about everything that has been hammered into your skull, you know, but then along about the third or fourth one, there's other things to think about. What the hell am I doing here? I don't really recall any one in particular, except I remember a tough landing I made one time, and we were landing in a pasture, in a cow pasture, the cow chips got kind of hard and baked in the sun, you know. And I came down and I broke a toe on one of them. So I was off at about my fifth or sixth jump or something. So I was off maybe a week before I could jump again. Until we quit limping, and that was the big thing. It didn't matter whether the toe was healed or not. You
as long as you quit living where you were in for another jump, you know. And
do you remember your first fire jump?
Oh, you bet. Yeah.
Do you remember where that was?
Down the Trinity Alps, and I think it was called the Yellow Jacket Fire, and it was in Northern California, and I think it was in around Yellow Jacket Ridge or something. That seems familiar to me. In those days, it was one long ways in there. I expect there's probably roads in there now, you know, but well, it was about 7 or 8 miles out to the end of the road, and we had was some real big timber in there. And we were jumped just before dark, and I was last man out, and I'm telling you, it was getting fairly dark, and I jumped from, we didn't want to go back up and get our altitude, so I jumped somewhat less than 1,000 feet. And I landed in a madrona or some type of a hardwood tree, as I recall, and hung up only about 3 feet off the ground. And so I thought, well, I'll just drop free from here instead of making a letdown with my rope. It's like we'd been trained, you know. And I kicked my release box, but I did not unbutton my bayonet strap, which was the strap that runs across the breast. And under that strap, of course, you had two canvas bags that you packed all your gear in, see. Well, those things rode up under my chin and rolled up under my chin and partially cut my wind off, so I couldn't even holler for help, you know. Here I was 3 feet off the ground, of course. I managed to get a handful of shroud lines, put them down, hold them in my teeth so I could unbutton that bayonet strap. It had a little spring catch in. And I dropped free without having to holler for help because that was. The rest of the fellows are kind of giving you a bad time about that, you know. But then I recall they dropped four fire packs and, or fire packs for four people anyway. That was all there was, I guess, on the fire. And a fire pack or a chute load with two fire packs hung up in the biggest sugar pine there was in the Trinity Alps. And we didn't have a saw to go through it, you know. No way. You couldn't even saw it down. And you couldn't get a climbing rope around it. You know, they give you an 18-foot climbing rope, you know. And good grief, it lacked 3-4 feet of going around that big sugar pine. So we were down to just four tools, which was a shovel of plasky for each man, and rations and stuff for two men instead of four, see, and water. And so we were on that fire 2 days. It was about a 10-acre fire. You know, it wasn't all that big, but we were on it for a couple of days. We only had sleeping bags for two, and we only had rations for two, and water for two. The water was the big item, and we were way up in the air from water. There wasn't even water in the first draw, you know, down the hill. And so we sent a scout out on the second day for water, see if he could find it, and he came back empty with no water. And so we, you know, that was kind of a tough little show. When we left there, then we got word that ground troops were coming in. And we left there sometime in the afternoon, as I recall, and started to hike out with our fire packs, our chute bags and everything, you know. And we only had pack boards for two people, so I was elected to pack mine out just by holding it on my shoulders, you know, and so that, I remember that one very well. And we finally, after, you know, maybe a couple of hours of travel, we got to a stream that was a live stream, and we just kind of soaked up the water, you know. That was a good sight, you know, to see water like that. And then what we did was we just kind of bathed some, you know, we drank our fill and rested for a little while and bathed some. And then we walked on in, it wasn't very far from there on into a, they had located a fire camp at the end of an old mining road. And when we got there, they were just unloading some stuff, and they had a roll of roast pork, and I remember that along, great big old one, and that was what we had for meat, you know, sandwiches, they had bread, and we made sandwiches, and gosh, I think four of us must have ate that whole big roast, you know, and juice, and there was about only four or five guys in a Jeep that had got in there and started his fire camp, so, and then we stuck around there until I don't recall whether we stayed overnight or anything, but we just stuck around there long enough till they got another Jeep into us, and then we drove out to Weaverville, California, and I remember meeting the forest supervisor there, and I wish I could recall his name today, but I can't. And he took us all four of us to dinner at a fried chicken place. It was about midnight, as I recall, but he opened them up for us, or he called, and they were open them up. So we all ordered double chicken dinners, as I recall, you know, and slept in a bunkhouse and then flew back for the next day. And that was the one and only fire jump that I made, although I got lots of fire duty out there on that summer. That was the only jump that I made.
What other fire duty were you doing?
Moore's Mill is one name that I recall, Moore's Mill Fire. And it was, more than 1,000 acres. And it just took off one afternoon and burned the mill down and took off up in the brush. That was one.
Why?
But maybe two or three others that.
Was
that
your outfit just not called up to do fire jumps?
Or it was a pretty slow year, as I recall. Matter of fact, just the other day I was looking at the records of fire jumps for that period,
mm-hmm.
You know, and number of fires or number of jumps, I guess, that was made for all of the jumpers in the nation, and I think they've been averaging 2,500, 3,000 jumps a year, even in those days. And that year that I jumped in 1950 dropped down to 1,400, so there wasn't very many fires that year. However, we did have some, what we consider today as being large fires, you know, 1,000-acre fires that took off locally. That we drove to, you know.
So your smoke jumper unit was used as ground troops?
Yeah, a lot of them, yeah. And we'd send the whole crew and just leave enough there to man the next one or two sticks, which was, we usually jump a 3 or 4 man stick, that's all.
Mm-hmm.
And then Nardine, that's the one we jumped in, that Nardine Narsman.
Right.
And there's a picture of it in that.
And what other projects did you do when you worked?
I helped build a chute loft there. We was just starting to build that base up out at the airfield. So I was doing some construction work and worked in a loft. And then I worked with a timber staff man or the timber layout man. I would say the timber staff. But we were doing some corner searches and some layout work up in some timber about a Key Junction, Oregon. I worked there. And, I don't recall, really.
Were you disappointed that you only got one fire jump?
Yeah, I was. Oh, absolutely, sure. But I was happy to have gotten that because I think there was a couple guys who didn't get a fire jump at all. And I don't recall how many jumps exactly that I made, but there was 7 practice. And I think I had the one fire jump, and then it was so long getting I did jump one other time. So I think totally it was all I had was 9 jumps.
Jumping out of
airplane? Oh, yeah, just for the fun of it. I can't say there isn't anything I wouldn't want to do today, but, you know, only because of my age. But, matter of fact, if I had a little more beer one day at the Huckleberry Festival in
at the Trunk Creek, Montana, I probably would have jumped with one of my buddies over there. My wife was kind of raising hell. She said, no, you don't. But yeah, I think most of us are that way. We did like it, or we wouldn't have been there. But I don't know of anybody that washed out because he didn't like it, or that he didn't jump or anything. But
what did wash out?
There may have been. There was, as I recall, injuries was the only thing that I can recall. Injury. I know there was a fellow called, his name was Hal Norton. And Hal Norton suffered a back injury. And a fellow by the name of Carson, he was that lawyer that I was talking about studying law. He suffered a broken ankle in a fire drill. But he was one of the older fellows that had jumped more than 1 year. There were several of us. More than half of us were only 1 year jumpers, as I recall, or about half or something in those days. So that you didn't jump. Very few of us jumped more than 1 or 2 years at the most. Now, you know, the guys, gee, I know one guy over there in Missoula has been jumping for 17 years. A friend of my wife's, a school teacher in Winterdine, and he jumped in the summer.
What's his name?
Wolf. That's over here, not he's in Missoula now.
What'd your family think about you going off and
jumping? Oh, I don't think anybody was particularly concerned. At least my mother didn't. You know, oh good, yeah, you jump out of an airplane, you're crazy, you know, kind of a deal. But I think nobody ever tried to talk me out of it, that's for sure.
What about your friends?
Oh, well, I was going with my wife at the time, you know, and I guess the attitude in those days was, he's working for the country, the good of the, you know, patriotism was much higher, intense than it is today. And if you work for the government, or you work in the Forest Service or in the Army or whatever you did in government work, I noticed that there was a hell of a lack of respect today in comparison to what there was in those days. And so, you know, you were respected by your friends and for doing that.
It was seen as patriotic.
Yeah, I believe that was a lot of it, too. I think that was a lot of it with those of us that did jump in those days. It was patriotic, yeah.
Did you feel that maybe in your male friends in college that there was a certain amount of envy?
Oh, sure, yeah. Because like I said, you know, now smoke jumpers or ex-smoke jumpers are, you know, there's a lot of them around. But in those days, there weren't very many of us. Out of my class are those people that I knew, whether they were my class or I only knew two others. So, that's maybe out of 500 forestry students total, that was all I ever knew, although there may have been more. Yeah, I think there was. But in those days, it didn't seem as though there was so much trouble getting a summer job as it is today, too, you know. And so you kind of had your pick. As a matter of fact, I was accepted by Missoula, McCall, I don't think it was McCall in those days. I think it was at Payette, the jumper base. But I was accepted at three places, and I picked Cave Junction.
Why?
I don't know. And I thought maybe I'd get more jumps there. Because it was a small base, you know, it was only, I think, 17 jumpers and 3 crew leaders. See, I thought I'd probably get more jumps there, and actually I got probably less, but I don't know.
Your crew leaders, were they regular Forest Service people? Or?
I don't think so. As I recall, they had a GS same as we did, you know. But I think they were part-time. I recall, and that they did come on early, like in maybe in May or something like that. And I don't ever recall going out of the region to go to New Mexico or like we do now to where the fire danger is the hottest, you know, they transfer them around now. We stayed right there. As I recall, that's the way they worked in those days. But they put those fellows on early and keep them late into September, later than our regular, I mean our jumpers, you know.
What about the pilots? Do you remember any pilots?
All I remember, his name was Ed, and that was all I can remember about him. He was a Forest Service pilot. And I remember hearing him talk about having to fly the regional forester someplace or something like that. So, you know, he was a regional pilot, but I don't remember what his name was or anything. I'd probably recognize it if I saw it. But,
yeah. When you were not doing projects or ground troops or jumping, what were you doing on your off time?
Off time? You mean, okay. Yeah, well, on our own time. Mm-hmm. Oh, I go over and do a little fishing over in the river. We was right there at the Illinois River. We go down the river swimming, you know, on our days off. And of course, we didn't drink any beer or anything. And there was the Oregon Caves were close. And we went up there a couple times. Well, some of the fellows had motorcycles. I remember Willie Elsel, every time you'd see him, he'd have climbing rope and his climbing gear on, and he was climbing mountains around there someplace. But that was really my bag. And I remember my folks lived in California, and they came up one weekend. But, I don't recall. A lot of times, well, if the fire danger did get pretty warm while we were... We were asked to stick around, but in those days they didn't pay you to stick around. If you want to go to a fire, well, stick around. So we did. So it was, but it was a very interesting summer. And I left them sometime after the 1st of September and got back just in time to go back to school. So, and the next year I was a senior. And I, as soon as we got out of school, I got married, so I just never went back. I had a permanent job. Not with the government.
And you said you would have liked to, maybe?
Yeah, I think if I'd have heard about that outfit a little earlier and got thinking about it, I would have liked to have had more jump experience, maybe two or three summers. Because it was pretty good money. Person of what we were making elsewhere in those days. Yeah, it was good one.
But you saw it as more than just a summer job.
Oh, yeah, you bet. Yeah.
Do you think that the other men in your outfit felt that way too?
I know some of them did. I know probably most of them did. There was a lot of esprit de corps in that outfit.
Why do you suppose that was?
Well, for some of the same reasons, a lot of them were veterans from World War II, or immediately after World War II, they were had been in. I think that there was more esprit de corps in whatever we did, whether you were working for the government or a company or whatever in those days and years now. And I don't know why that is, but I expect that there was a difference. It was a different attitude about your working and so on, I think, in those days.
Yeah.
Because a lot of the things that they're calling abuses today, you know, were never, that was just part of the job, went with the job, you know. You traveled on your own time and you worked long hours. Good grief, we would work 30, 40 hours straight without a let up, you know, and a lot of times without food or any support at all in those days, you know. We were paid As far as I can remember, I don't think I've ever worked, you know, we ever had to work for nothing or anything, but you know, today with our OSHA, you know, laws and regulations and personnel matters and so on, like, there's a lot of things that they don't do today that we used to do in the old days. I never thought anything about it. But, yeah, go ahead.
No, I was just going to ask you if the men that you were with in your season firefighting, if had it not been for being in the Forest Service, being smoke jumpers, would you have been friends, possibly socially, with those men?
Yeah, we were the same kind of people, I suppose, yeah. Had I known those people in college or had met them, you know, in the work environment or wherever, yes, we probably would have been, you know, we were the same kind of people.
What
really.
Kind of people are you?
Adventurous. I would think that would be, you know, we weren't hellraisers. You know, we'd go to town and have a few beers, but we're never in any kind of shape that we couldn't jump, you know. And, there was a lot of friendship, and although after we broke up, I never really corresponded with any of those fellows or anything. But if I were to see one of those boys today, why, you know, he would be a friend. And I think that's just the way. That's all right. Come in.
Excuse me.
And I think that hey, Jamie called again. So I think those, we were the same kind of folks. You know, we like the outdoors. We like the hard work. We like the adventure of jumping. And we like to be able to talk about it later. And I think that's a lot of it. I think that's why we had such a good turnout last week. Because a lot of those fellows had that camaraderie, whatever they call it, you know, that has lasted over the years. A lot of those guys, you know, they've never seen each other since, and yet they were old buddies slapping backs, a lot of back slapping and all that kind of stuff last week. I think that would probably speak for the whole bunch of them.
Well, do you have, do you think that smoke jumping, like smoke jumpers now you talk about, men is up to 17 years and stuff. Do you think that it's a profession? Do you see it as professional?
I think it's more professionalized today, sure. But so is everything else.
And what makes it professional, do you think?
It isn't just the idea that they're jumping for longer periods of time today.
I think it's the training they get, the sense of mission, more today than it would. Well, I can't say the sense of mission. I think it's more of a job for them today than it is than it was in the old days. I mean, just a job. And
what do you think? Why? What about the training? Do you think it's different now than what you went through?
Well, first of all, the equipment's all that much different, and it's being developed to a very high degree. You know, we were using the old jump chutes from the Army, you know, left over from World War II, and of course we only had the one airplane. But today they'll jump out of several different airplanes, depends on where they're at, in all kinds of terrain, from Alaska tundra to drier Gambrel Oak hillsides down in Arizona, New Mexico, and everything from tall timber to grasslands over on the prairies almost, you know. And so they need that training that takes that all into consideration. Plus there's a lot more regulations that we've got to, you know, OSHA, safety regulations that we've got to comply with today that we didn't in those days, you know. I would say we had a safe organization, but really our injury rate was quite a bit higher than it is today, I'm sure of that. So, you know, the Man Gulch fire should have never happened to the, I mean, the burning of the 13 jumpers should have never happened. It wouldn't happen today under our training. So I think that we have a more intense training today than we had in those days. I think you can almost compare us to the old barnstormers, of a generation before, you know, those daredevil pilots in their beat up old airplanes, you know. But I think that the smoke jumpers of the 40s and the 50s were quite similar to them, to those people, and probably with the same kind of temperament and the same kind of egos and the same kind of attitude that they had. I would kind of consider that. And that jumping to us was more than just a way to get to the fire, you know. That's what tied the people together. Blood from fire with lots of other folks, you know. But I hardly remember anything about those days. But it's still very vivid in my memory about what happened in 1950 when I jumped. So, does anybody know where Cliff Marshall is?
I don't know.
Try to find out from Cliff and I. He was a foreman.
So how would you sum up that summer of smoke jumping?
Oh, one I'll never forget. I had a lot of fun. I had some disappointments in not having more fire jobs. But that was the only disappointment. I wasn't disappointed with the country that I saw. I wasn't disappointed in the training or disappointed in myself in being able to stand up to the rigors, you know. I think those are the things that probably I remember most. And although, I got married the next year, that wasn't the only reason I didn't go back. You know, I didn't go back because we had a war start, you know, in Nepal. And I finished my college, was offered a steady job, and then I went from there 6 months later as in the Marine Corps. So, but that summer is one I'll never forget. It was one of the happiest ones of my life.
Yeah. What do you think about women smoke jumpers?
Oh, I think it's kind of neat. God, yeah. Hey, you know, when I was in the camps, whether it was a logging camp or whether it was Forest Service camp or fire camps, wherever, we didn't see any ladies at the camp at all. We always had men cooks, even, you know, and no ladies. And when we wanted to go see the ladies, we went down, you know. And so it's hard for me to get used to that, you know, but I am now, of course, you know. So. But I think it's neat. If that's what they want to do, hey. Fantastic. I think everybody should do what they want to do. And I think the gals have done a remarkably good job in holding it from my standpoint. And I hold a safety chief's card over in Region 6 and here in Region 1. But I get too old fast. But from what I've seen, and I've been on a lot of fires, those gals are putting out their share, you know, and holding their end of it, and I don't see why they wouldn't make good smoke jumpers along with the rest of them. And it's something that takes a little getting used to for, a person from my generation, my walk of life. Why, it takes a little something getting used to after being so many years without seeing ladies on the fire line or in the camps, you know. Does take a little getting used to, you know. So, but my experience as a safety chief, safety officer, safety chief, I've never seen any.
any problems developing with them that wouldn't develop with a man. I mean, there was mm-hmm. no. Matter of fact, I just probably a lower ratio of gals who come in and use the first aid facilities than men on the job. And so, you know, the usual blisters or thorns or splinters or falls or something like that was all that I've ever experienced. And I used to keep track pretty close to the first aid tent that which is happening on the fire, because there are indicators. So I could never see any problem. And once I got used to seeing ladies out on the fire line, you know, and then I guess the younger folks wouldn't have that transition to make, you know.
Yes,
I got no hang-ups at all about it. I think it's kind of neat. How many ladies home farmers are there this year?
There's five out of Missoula, and there's one down in McCall, and I'm not sure. Maybe eight, I think someone told me.
Good. Hey, good dog.
Well, is there anything else that you'd like to put on this tape about your experience smoke jumping, or your feelings about it, or the time that you were doing it?
No, I think we've covered it pretty well, really.
Okay.
Sandra, I just like the opportunity, because I realize now, because I'm a part of history, you know. Those of us that were in the early days of smoke jumping, and I guess you got to admit that was the early days of smoke jumping. You hate to admit it, but hell, it was. And, I guess I never really thought about it until I said, "No, a reunion, you know, for all the old broke down smoke jumpers." Until I got over there, you know, then I realized that, hey, we were a part of history. You know, after all, there was very few of us in those days, and so, I guess I feel pretty good about it.